Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, The Bill Simmons Podcast. Check it out on Spotify.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Go Eagles, man. Go Eagles. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wright's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today, we're going to talk about the Women's World Cup draw, Unai Emery being named Aston Villa manager, plus some love for Fulham and flowers for Kepa. And my guests are Flo Lloyd Hughes and Musa Kwonga.
Yes, yes.
Ian, did you see the Phillies are in the World Series?
I saw, yeah, because like, obviously going to Philly the other day, I've got to say, everybody's talking about my Philly, like, oh, why are you wearing a Philly top? No, no, no. And I support the Philadelphia Eagles. I've got a t-shirt of the Phillies, but I'm
yes,
not as,
there you go.
I'm not as you're in not, as the Philadelphia ultra. Eagles, because the Philadelphia Eagles is because of Vince Bagali and the film Invincible. You need to watch the film Invincible. It's the greatest underdog story I've ever seen in anything, apart from maybe Kurt Warner.
Oh, yeah.
That is an amazing story, Kurt Warner. We'll talk about that one another time. But I was telling everybody in Philly who would listen that that's why I support Philadelphia Eagles, because they've done tryouts. They were going through a bad time, 70s. They'd done tryouts. And a guy called Vince Bagali, who came off the streets, went for the tryout, got into the Philadelphia Eagles, got to play for them, and he scores a try in the film and everything. It's just like a wonderful story.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm an Eagle fan. That's why I say, go Birds, go Birds!
That's such a good name. You just don't get names like
what,
that.
Vince Bagali?
In the UK. Yeah.
That's a great
Vince Bagali,
name.
Man. Vince Bagali. That's such a good, like, you know, rags to riches
it's
name.
It's a brilliant name.
I think
like
it sounds
that.
More epic because it's America as well.
And
America,
you know what? Yeah. Have you guys, have you been to Philadelphia, any of you?
I have no, for like no. 2 days.
My God,
once.
It's a real place, bro.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you drive around. It's like, I remember, it reminds me of when I was younger, my old area, like Broccoli, Southeast London, Crofton Park and that. It was amazing. When you are amongst that many fans, and I think it's because of my experience here in England, you're not really amongst those kind of fans. But when you're amongst other fans, you're very anxious. You feel anxiety and anxiousness. Mm. And I'm not joking. There was not one time amongst those 2 days where I felt any anxiety with Tottenham, West Ham, Chelsea, Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Leeds. That not one fan caused me any anxiety. It was like I said it on, I think I posted it. It's like being in a utopian football world.
Wow.
It was everybody was just glad to be there. Everybody just loved everybody. It was just like Chelsea fans were there, Tottenham fans were there, Arsenal fans were there, Liverpool fans were there, Man City fans, and everybody got on. They just watched their game, they cheered for their team. But these fans were a joy to be amongst. A joy.
Wow.
You can walk through, people wanted to take photos, wanted to tell you about the story when they watched you, or when their dad watched you, or this and that, why they supported Arsenal, and when they used to, what they used to hate. All the stories that you could just, when they're telling you, you feel like, okay, I'm getting it from a place of real love. The kind of like stories they were telling. And it felt amazing. I could have stayed there for a month. No problem. No problem. You know, it was brilliant. The fan parks, the fan fest, the mornings live Premier League thing, what they do alongside Barclays, it's brilliant. It's a fantastic idea for them because they get a real sense of being amongst the American fans who didn't realize how much these people go through to watch their team.
Mm.
wherever it is. Yeah, the time zones. I think they've done well with the time zones because it kind of kicks in over there between 7 and 10, 30, 11, that kind of time. So kind of works for them, but they will do anything to get to watch the game. They'll go anywhere in that. It was amazing. That was just my first trip.
Wow, it's lucky for some.
Step one, baby.
Can I tell you about step two?
Please.
Let's go.
So step two, I came back to England. I just quickly went, boom, wham, chick, chick, you know?
Oh, you came back in between. I wasn't sure if you went straight to Auckland.
No, I didn't go straight to Auckland because I've done that whistle stop thing where you come in, bam, put the bags down, boom, bang, chick, put some change of clothes, slam the door, back in the car, shoom, go on the airport, on the plane.
Why didn't you make a TikTok of this? You need to know that this slam, bam, think, thank you, ma'am situation went down.
I think it's done. I think it's on there.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I remember seeing some stuff, but then all of a sudden, I'm on a flight, 22 hours, I don't know what it was, I kind of lost count of it, to New Zealand for the Women's World Cup draw, which was amazing. And oh my gosh, we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to do something in one of the podcasts, guys, because I had some real good sit-down time with Jeremy and Gilberto Silva talking about elite football and elite players and coaching. And it was unbelievable. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. FIFA, obviously, is very finicky, especially doing the balls and you have to screw it off and you have to hold it at a certain height and you can't have anything where people can't see. You can't put your hands behind your back or in your pockets because there are people saying that. And I got a lot of stick for you're meant to put your hand in the bowl, you know, when you stir it, then you're meant to look up like this and then not look back in and then go and pick one. But I kept looking in the bowl. But at the same time, I can't fucking see anything in the bowl. It's just all the balls are, you know, it's not like, oh, that one. So it doesn't make any difference, but apparently only me and Jeremy were the ones that did. And Gilberto Silva done it perfectly.
Are you going to get blamed for the draw then?
Yeah. I was going to say, is the whole draw now has to be redone?
No, it doesn't have to be redone
because it's all compromised.
Drama, duh. You know, the Avengers, we need to get the fucking Avengers to save the world. And, you know, but then anyway, it was done and it was brilliant. And then can I just tell you about the nightmare of all nightmares, why it made me really nervous is because, so you're getting ready. So they're getting ready to call a name. So that one goes out from that side of the stage and this one from that side. So I'm the third one from my side of the stage. And as they go, and for 33 caps and England, they're big advocate for the women's game. Ian Wright, the guy's coming to change my battery. I was like, And so then what happens is, Can you hear the claps? Yay! And then the claps died down and I still hadn't gone out there yet. And then so and Amanda Davis, who was presented with Carly Lloyd, they were looking like, oh God, making a big entrance. And it was like, no. As I was walking on, I actually said to them, no, I wasn't making a big entrance. It was the New Zealand Prime Minister was there. The Infantino was there. Everyone was there looking like, what are you doing? And I just had to say, no, the guy just came to change my mic.
It wasn't me, I swear.
Just to finish the story off, it wasn't even my mic.
Oh.
Yeah, it was quite nerve-wracking. But
to be honest with you, yeah.
Yeah, go on.
They shouldn't use balls.
What should they do?
They should just use like chips with numbers. You just put your hand into like Scrabble chips. They put your hand in a bag and draw them out and drop them in. It shouldn't be a thing like, because I've noticed the amount of times, was it Arshavin or the other time?
Yeah.
One of those people struggling to get that. I can't. Either Arshavin or someone else.
Get it open. Struggling get the little thing. Yeah.
And it was a nightmare to open it. And you're stressed out under the lights, you get sweaty fingers and all this.
Yes,
Musa, as someone who's definitely cheated pulling tiles out of Scrabble, then I wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, my God.
You can feel.
There she is.
You can feel the little thing.
Well, how about this, bro? You won't be selected.
Yeah. No, but you won't be selected. Because, you know, there's tests for that. There's tests for people like you to vet. There's screening you out.
No, it's because I used to play against my mum. My mum's really good with words and I needed to get an upper hand.
You cheated the person that brought you into this world.
Sometimes you need to do that to your parents. You just
I'm not angry.
Really,
I'm not angry.
We're living
her.
In a time of
I'm
wolves. We're living in a land of wolves.
We are, but that's very disappointing to hear that, Flo. But I'm glad that you're confident to say that on here and come out and tell us that you're a cheat.
In the safe space. Yeah,
look,
it's a safe space.
I don't feel safe to be honest. I can sleep well at night that I know I'm not the only one in Wrighty's house who's cheated at a board game. That's what I can. Like I can put a hand on my heart and say I will not be the first and I won't be the last.
I'm shocked.
What do you think of the draw, Flo?
I was quite happy with it. I don't think there could have been a better result for England. Mm. I think they could have potentially got a weaker second seed team than Denmark, yeah. But really, but they dodged a couple of bullets there. They could have got Holland. I was pretty chuffed with it. I think China is beatable.
Yeah, China's beatable.
And the playoff, one of those playoff teams is certainly beatable. And in terms of travel and timings and everything.
Hour and a half, I think, is their longest.
Yeah, and then if they win the group, they'll play a knockout game in Brisbane and then it'll be hopefully Sydney all the way through, baby. Mm. So I think it's pretty solid. Yeah. I'm very happy with that draw.
You could have
been in New Zealand. That would be the only option, is try and be in New Zealand the whole time. But I also think for fans, this is a good draw. So I think it's kind of the best of both worlds.
I think that Alexi Lalas put a bit of pressure on the USA team in the way he was saying about the three-peat, and they've done it before. And
that was intense.
It was quite intense. And that's why when I done my little bit at the end, talking about England and where we are and where we're coming from in this group and showing respect to the other group, I had to say to him, you know, we've come up against the best and we've beaten the best. And I kind of said that in it, because, you know, when it's the World Cup and people are going to go an extra 25%, 30%, and they're playing against England. It's not going to be easy, even like with Denmark. And we know that Peniel Harder is their main player, but at the same time, people raised it. This is the World Cup. So I thought that he was...
For a disrespects team. The competition.
Yeah.
I don't like it, Moose?
But the thing is, what I didn't like is the way that you look at that American side, and we know that they're very good, but they're going through transition. I think he needed to... I think that the USA manager would have been sitting there thinking, oh, really, man? Really?
Wind your neck in a bit. Yeah, it's too much.
Also, you know what the draw also brought up is that it looks like it will probably lead to, if all things kind of go the way that they might be predicted, is that it could lead to an England-USA final, which is obviously what most neutrals want. It's what England fans want. It's what USA fans want.
I just want to beat them again.
But it also points to perhaps a Germany quarterfinal for England, exactly, which will be tough.
And let's not think in France, you know, with France.
So they could be out before the semis come around.
At some stage, France are going to click and get it together. So we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, but Karim Diakra was in Auckland still looking like a James Bond villain. I can't.
And she's so scary. The Spanish guy, saw the Spanish manager, Vila, there. He was looking like, I'm cool.
Very lucky. Yeah, I've swerved it.
I'm cool, bro.
I don't like that at all. You know, I must say, what I do like is Group B. Australia, Republic of Ireland.
Yes, what a great Nigeria, game for Republic Canada. Of Ireland. That's a great group.
That's tasty. Because Ireland
not for Republic
came in,
of like, Ireland. Not for Republic of Ireland, but it's a great group for them to be in the first game.
They could nick some points. They've beaten Australia before. Australia are so all over the place. I think Ireland could sneak through.
This is in their home country.
I know, it's a different vibe. I don't know. I don't know if there's enough time for them. I don't think there's enough depth in their talent pool, unfortunately, especially in defence. I just don't think there's enough time for them to develop what they need to develop in time for this home tournament.
Can I have a hot take?
Go on.
I think Nigeria and Canada should be really happy with that group because it's tough. And I think coming out of it, you'll be battle hardened early in a tournament. You know, you look at like England and they got worked by Austria, and people then realised how good Austria were later in the tournament, right? I think there's a similar thing going to go on in this group, maybe for Nigeria or Canada, where you'll get a strong examination because you don't want to come out cold into the second round in a World Cup. I know it's getting out of the group. You need to have your tests, I think, fairly early at some point.
But they've got a few players, Australia, like Rasso and Caitlin Ford and Sam Kerr. They're all in and around that nice age.
It's the defence. It's just they've got good attacking players. They just can't keep clean sheets to save their lives. They're just messy.
One of the guys in Spain Federation, and I'm speaking to him, and he's speaking about everything what's going on without speaking about it. You understand?
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, the manager is very confident. You could see, I saw him. I thought, for a guy who's 15 players who just said they don't want to play for you, you seem very confident with everything that's going on. We need to find out what's going on deep with Spain. But I think it would be the biggest tragedy if Spain, those players don't get to play for Spain. And I'm hearing that the Federation have said, you lot have to apologise. Come and apologise to the manager before you can play again. And these girls are adamant they're not going to apologise. Something's going to have to give before next year, because I think that they're going to miss an unbelievable opportunity, Spain.
I can't believe, actually, well, I can believe it, but I'm still appalled that they're backing the coach over the players. It doesn't surprise me because the way that hierarchy of football works, but I'm still, it's still pretty shocking.
And also the,
this is why I don't know.
The history of that federation has previous, it's not the first time, you know, players have had to fight back against that federation. So I think
it's awful.
It's not surprising, but they're shooting themselves in the foot because this is a generation that can be really successful and there's not enough time. If they wait, and it looks like Musa, like you said, they're going to back him. It looks like they're not going to back down. So it is going to be another generation, yet another World Cup that passes them by because of this. Like, something's got to give. I think from the players' side, I think they've been quite transparent with saying that
they don't like this.
They just want better. They want, like, the standards aren't good enough. Mm. It's not just him. It's the federation. They also want to change. It's the support they're being provided, it's the commitment from the federation. Like, what they want to establish and make clear to the outside world is, look at the setup of the US and England. Mm. We aren't getting that, and that's not good enough. We want to win tournaments, and it's not just a Wilder problem. It's the whole federation, and it's the support system around us, and that's not enabling us to be top class athletes. We're getting that some of our clubs, and then we arrive for national duty and it's not the same. Mm. And I think that's why it's such a bigger challenge than just sacking a coach. It's about taking on the whole federation. And Spain did this in 2015, and some of those players never played for the country again. So trying to dismantle, like, we know this from, you know, what's happened to other players over the years, like, trying to dismantle a federation and get them to change in women's football especially is almost an impossible job. So I don't know, are they just going to have to eventually just suck it up and come back and try and play for the World Cup? I just don't know.
Guys, Unai Emery is back, and he's got a Villa. Yeah. He's got another Villa in his name. He needs to have Villa. And if something to do with Villa, and Unai Emery's in the mix. But I do feel that Unai Emery is always coming back somewhere for me. I just feel like there's unfinished...
He lurks in the shadows.
It's unfinished business, because as much as, you know, when it was Arsenal, I couldn't see it. I don't know if I wanted to see it enough. I don't know. But it wasn't happening quick enough for me to think, yes, Unai, I see. And then we obviously see him leave and go and do his stuff and, you know, come back and beat us and everything. But, like, I know there's something about Unai, Villa's club, and if they can get it right, you see what they tried with Stevie. They tried. Some reason, I feel for Stevie because I know him, and you just want a player of that elite ability to be able to transfer it into management. It's not quite happened again at the moment. Hopefully he will be able to do that. But I think Unai Emery has something about him where he can go. He can go to a level. And Villa is a brilliant club for that.
It's about the fit. Yeah, you know what it is? The first response we had, I think, in the chat was, I hope the fit is right.
Mm.
Because as a style of football, you look at, like, him getting to the semis with Villarreal, you know that he can manage a tournament really, really well. Mm. You know, he's won 4 Europa Leagues. To be honest, he should be, his credentials should be beyond questioning. I think the thing about Emery is there's a lot of, let me be very frank for a start, the whole joking about his accent and the xenophobia and all of that. Like, I really wish that if he'd wound the clock back, he'd just have a translator for the first year and just talk his ideas.
He was just trying to just learn himself and let us see that. I thought that was pretty cool of him.
No, I thought it was very cool.
It was a lot of the media that stirred up. It wasn't just fans on Twitter, like, making memes. It was a lot of actual, like, you know, high profile people, and that doesn't help the situation at all.
Sorry to go off on one, but those are the same people. The same people mocking him are the same people that will come to a big European city and talk loudly at a waiter and a member of staff, whatever, like someone serving them, and they'll talk loudly in English at them like they're clowns, even though the person they're talking to might speak 4 or 5 languages.
Yes.
Right? And the reason why the Emery thing is so disgraceful is the gap between the perception of him and his abilities as a coach is so big. He's basically become a meme in the UK, even though he's one of the most brilliant tactical minds in European club football of the last 20 years. 3 straight Europa Leagues, we joke about it, but 3 straight Europa Leagues with Sevilla, right? And it was funny because I was watching, in terms of his fit, the tactical fit. So the thing that makes me feel that he might be a good fit, I was watching some of the old coaches' voice stuff. And there's one where he is talking about the win by Sevilla over Liverpool and talking about how he uses right-footed wingers on the left side with the overlap. And I thought, oh, this is room for someone like a Coutinho. This is good for someone like a Bailey. Even the 4-2-3-1, the way that he's building around like the pivot and the way that he uses Banega to come in and disrupt like the lines as a 10 for Sevilla. I was thinking, actually, as a Villa player, watching that coach's voice, the way that Sevilla beat Liverpool as a blueprint, that actually translates very well to the Premier League. And there's a part of me that thinks, yes, it's a gamble, but I think that Emery, you know, that the Emery, the later era Emery, who basically swears at people that make fun of his accent, I'm like, oh, he's biting back a bit. If he kind of goes with that underdog mentality into Birmingham and takes that energy, I think it could be a real revelation. Yeah. Because the last thing I'll say actually, Flo, I've never seen fans so excited by an appointment as Villa fans were by the appointment of Emery. It's genuine excitement, universal.
Yeah, they see somebody who can bring something. They see that maybe the experience of him as something.
What a coup. Yeah, it's a coup.
It is. They see that the fact that he's got the experience, he knows what he's doing. And like I think he's got unfinished business here. And not only on the football pitch, but like you're saying about the xenophobia and all the shit that comes with it, just to like silence these people, you know, because it's not fair. It's not fair to be speaking about him like this.
You know what, Musa, I'm pleased that I didn't dig enough on social media last night to see the reaction from fans. It was so funny because when you messaged in the group, I thought it was like, oh, Emery might be going to Villa. And then literally after I read your message, 25 seconds later, the announcement was there. I was like, oh, he's actually like right now being announced.
Yeah, wow.
I think the concern for me, and this, I am relieved that fans are excited. The concern for me is that the Gerrard era had been really fucking boring. And that, I think, having experienced that a lot as a QPR fan, there is nothing worse than being bored. I think you will happily watch a team go down in flames if they do it like with a little bit of chaos, with a little bit of fun, and it's still entertaining and they take risks and they might get rewarded for them sometimes. But I think the issue with Gerrard's Villa, it was really, really boring. And I think that was my concern, is that going for a manager like Emery, which in my mind, and Musa, I think it's quite good because you've enlightened me a little bit there. In my mind, I never really perceived him as a very like progressive, forward attacking manager. I always thought it was quite a negative possession, possession football, and of a type where it's like the goal is to not lose rather than to try and win. And that is my concern with Villa, is it's like, it's not necessarily the wrong man for the job. It's the wrong time, because they need someone who is going to light up that place, because they have been so bored for so long and they need a spark to reignite the fans' love for that team. And that's my concern.
No, I think that, because this is what I'm saying about Emery at Arsenal. I couldn't see that. It felt very defensive. It felt very overcoached? It just felt like it wasn't flow. It didn't.
It was rigid.
Yes,
it was rigid.
That's what it is. And I don't know, maybe you have to hope that he's learned something like that, because I feel for Stevie, because when you watch them, I still didn't realize what, I didn't know what they were trying to do. They've got flair players. Look at Douglas Luiz. We were trying to get him. That's how good he is. He's very good. You know, Bailey, you saw how good he is. You know, Buendia is something waiting to explode. He needs somebody to get him to just like, right, come here, look at me. You know, when someone grabs you by the shoulders, come here, look at me. You've got more and I want more. He's got something about him where he can get games by the scruff of the neck and make your team win. He's got players there. And hopefully Unai will use those players, those offensive players, and be... Because you always want to be solid at the back, without a shadow of a doubt, which he probably will be. But you've got to make your fucking forward players go forward with some love.
But that's why the weekend was so good, right? It's because the shackles are off. Like, and that's what I'm worried about. He's going to be like, right, everyone, strap yourselves in. We're going to get the whiteboard out. Uh-oh.
I worry about the lack of self-awareness of the Villa management, the corporate and the executive level. I worry about that, because they brought Gerrard in, it didn't work, and they backed Gerrard, of course, financially. Fine, I get that. I respect all of that. My concern is, did they have a long enough period of reflection before going straight for Emery?
Wow.
They didn't sit and think, we got Gerrard so wrong that he didn't get his ideas across. We got this fit really wrong. They didn't stop and pause and go, let's let Danks have this for a few weeks and see what he can do. They didn't give him a chance to build that. That's my concern about all of this. This feels
rushed.
I hope Emery's the right fit.
Feels rushed,
it feels
yeah.
too fast.
Mm. And £5 million, actually, it's not cheap to get him. That's not cheap.
I think Perslow needs to do, there needs to be more reflection there. You can't go and parade, Steven Gerrard, here he is, here's the guy. And then you're like, okay, next manager. It's like, hang on a minute. Mm. Where's the performance review for you? Right?
Mm.
You're jumping straight to Emery. And like, my first reaction with Emery was, is it a good fit? I had to reassure myself it was a good fit by looking at his previous tactical stuff, because I'd seen his Villarreal stuff. I wanted to dig a bit into Sevilla, but Emery's not been the best in the league.
Have they gone for experience? I don't know.
They've gone for name and not fit. Right. They've gone for name and not fit is my worry.
Yeah, I have that same concern.
Wow.
That's my fear, because you look at the style of football they're playing. If Emery goes to, like, let's say Atleti after Simeone, I can understand that more, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can see that because, okay, the times, or I don't know, Athletic Club, or, you know, that, but that type of profile of club where it's like, okay, we will relinquish a certain amount of possession and we'll be secure and we'll break and we'll counterpunch. But to take him to Villa, my first question was fit. And then I thought to myself, my second question was, what self-analysis has Perslow done to be like, if I got the fit wrong last time, how about I just let Danks watch?
But I think what
the weird thing was, I think this was all agreed before Danks had them play against Brentford. And
yes.
Now it's awful because
it's so quick.
Yeah.
Now they're going to be like, oh my God, there's someone right here in the clubhouse.
And he's not going to be there until the 1st of November. So that's going to be his first game in charge. So he's not even there this weekend.
Yeah, that's
so they've
that
got Jesus. Another game.
That's something they've been looking at for a while. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
To move that quickly on Stevie.
They had, I think, Thomas Tuchel on the shortlist and Pochettino, Emery, and then one other I can't remember now, but Emery quickly became the favourite. And last night I was rereading an interview that The Athletic did with him about when he rejected the Newcastle offer, right? And he talked about then that it was an interview just before the quarterfinal that Villarreal had in the Champions League. And it was about him, why he turned down that offer. Mm. And he said, you know, I had a job to do. I needed to see this project through. And I just really want to know what's changed now. What's changed now that he thinks now is the right time, whereas the Newcastle project wasn't.
Mm.
Because he made it quite clear in that interview that it wasn't about, you know, the concerns around the ownership and human rights in Saudi Arabia. It was nothing to do with that. It was just, I need the Champions League project. I wanted to see that through.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm just really intrigued as why Emery's like, yeah, now I want to come back to the Premier League and I want to give it another go.
Point to prove.
And falling stock. You got to keep your stock high because Emery, look, because you know what it is, league performance. Let's be really frank about this. Emery's league performances haven't been the best. It's like a kind of, you know, like Ancelotti got knocked for a long time for like being really good in cups and not in leagues.
Yes.
Mm. I think that Emery's an even more extreme example of that. And I think there's an element of like the Champions League luster after a full season where you're not fully at your best at Villarreal, you lose that luster.
Mm.
And people start seeing, he chanced it again. So basically Emery's like, I've got to move my stock as high. And I think there was, I mean, they can say, oh, it's not right for the Newcastle time. I think there was a bit of like heat and light around Newcastle. I think managers swerved the Newcastle job because it was all a bit too, there was
chaotic.
Too much. Yeah, it was too chaotic. And now, weirdly enough, Eddie Howe's made the kind of job that you'd want to take as a manager if you don't have a problem with the other stuff.
Yes.
But I think, Emery was being quite shrewd there.
Mm.
And let's be honest, Villa, with all the investment and the money they're putting into the club, it's a great opportunity for a manager who's trying to like rebuild themselves in a country.
I hope for both of their sakes, it hasn't been jump out of the frying pan into the fire.
It's a shotgun wedding. That's what it is.
It's a shotgun wedding.
I'd love to have a crystal ball and just shake it and be able to see where this ends up because I'm so intrigued to see what happens.
Can I just say quickly before we end on this? I don't know how Stevie Gerrard would have felt watching that first 16 minutes of football.
Oh, God.
But you know what's going to happen. He's going to end up back at Rangers because Van Bronckhorst has been on the ropes for a while now.
What would be the point of him going back there?
Gerrard's
going
to go back there because they love him. It's easy. It's simple. It's comfortable. That's where he's going.
It's not. It doesn't make sense, Flo. It doesn't seem... Because if you're going to talk about a trajectory, then you'd have to say from Rangers to Villa is a brilliant fucking move for me. Brilliant move to go to a club with Villa's stature and Villa's history and quality and capabilities from Rangers was perfect.
But then what does he do now?
I don't know.
What does he do now?
You wait. Because it's not like somebody's going to give him another opportunity at some stage. So you wait, you see what job. And all what happens now is like what's happened with Frank. The next job becomes more and more important to you. I have to get this one right. You just get more and more pressure with the next job. So that's all what's happening with Stevie, but he'll get one. And hopefully he'll have learned a lot from what's happened with Villa and the way people talk about how he handled the players and how it was, like you mentioned, boring football and how, you know, how the fans perceived him and how they didn't like the way he was. He's gonna have to look at all of that. He's not an idiot. He's gonna have to look at all of that and find out, right, what did I do wrong? What can I do right? And then go again. So we'll see how it goes. I hope it works out for him because I do love Stevie G. Fulham, man.
Let the record show I'm wearing a QPR shirt.
You'll see Flo's wearing a QPR shirt. One day we might be able to speak about QPR like this, especially with the way that manager's working. It might happen, Flo.
One day soon.
It might happen, but in respects of Fulham, for the first time, and I can't remember how long, and I'm going back to, I don't know how many managers, four or five managers. They are fun. Fulham are fun right now. The way they're playing, the way Silva's got them playing. You know, what, they 7th, 18 points. They're beating teams. Who have they beat? They've beaten Leeds, Forest, Villa, Brighton, Brentford, drawing with Liverpool. You know, I thought they were very unlucky. They're very unlucky in what game did I watch them in where I thought that they should have done well? I thought they were unlucky against Newcastle. But the fact is that they now, with their front players and the way they play, are a very tough team. Can I say, Paulinho?
Yes, for me, what a player.
Is one of those players that they found outside the top six. If you had to do a team outside the top six who could break into the top six players, he's definitely one of them. And I think Anthony Robertson at left back is another one. But that Paulinho, I cannot see him staying there for too much longer. I can't see it happening. The way they're playing, the way Great that they're player. Closing teams down.
And Harrison Reed.
It's the way
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Reed. The way they're closing teams down, the way the offensive players, Willian looks like he's got a new lease of life. You know, the way that
never thought I would see
honestly,
the day,
I'm,
genuinely.
You know something? I'm very pleased for him, especially the way he checked out of Arsenal saying, listen, man, this isn't working. I don't want your money. Keep your money. That's I'm going to move on. Pure class. Left a shitload of money on the table. I'm not sure if a lot of Arsenal fans know that. I hope they do. But the fact is, he's gone there and he's found his life and love and football and everything. Like a Fulham side, that's very enterprising.
Yeah.
They're very enterprising. I'm pleased for Fulham because I cannot remember the last time I've seen Fulham playing in a way where they're not only entertaining, but there's a devilment about them where you think, oh my gosh, you better be on it, man, because Fulham, I think they're going to beat teams. They're going to beat teams 3 and 4s simply because they're going for it now.
Yes.
Simply because they're going for it now.
I do have to give them some credit. As much as it pains me, I do need to give them some credit. And also because they've done this all with losing their best player, Carvalho, to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And when that deal was done, basically long before the championship season ended, I didn't see them having as much creative energy and Gaal going forward. And yes, there is a little bit of a still reliance on Mitrovic, but he's in such good form at the moment, it doesn't really matter. Set pieces are so vital to the way they play. And when you've got someone like Mitrovic, of course you're going to do that because you're going to try and utilise one of your best assets. But they are more dynamic than that as well. And they break so well. They break like, you know, Conte wants to break with Tottenham, but sometimes it doesn't click. That's kind of how Fulham hit teams on the break. Carl's done a really good piece about them in The Athletic just the other day because he was at their game against Leeds. And yeah, I think they're really exciting. What I would say though, and it was the doubts that people had about them when they went up and, you know, they're still there now, is that defence, that defensive line is still pretty championship. And you're obviously seeing that with the amount of goals that they're conceding.
22.
And they are very open. That's obviously, like you said, Ian, that's going to happen. But eventually, you've got to find a good middle ground where you can still be solid enough and hard to break down. And I think that's the issue. I think they're still trying to...
Maybe they're trying to... But with that, the reason why they're probably so energetic and so energized and so pressing from the front is to try and protect that back, because they know. Like I said, with Fulham, you can see Fulham will let go. Fulham will lose games 4-3. They'll lose or they'll win games 4-3. The way they're playing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're no longer a Frankenstein. They're not Frankenstein, just patchwork, bolted together. There's something happening now. And yes,
they're basically this year's Leeds,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
You know, like they're basically, yes. Remember like when Louis Saha was such a key figure for them up front?
You know?
It's almost like it's
the Pizza Hut days. Those are the Pizza Hut days.
So it's a mix of that, you know, in the sense that it's like you've got Saha. For Saha then, you have Mitrovic now. And for Bielsa's Leeds then, you've got shout out to Marco Silva, who really needed this. Talk about a manager that needed a bounce back, right? He needed a glow up.
And when they hired him, I was a bit like, ooh, this is going to end in expensive tears.
But they're cooking. And actually, I got to say this. There's something about the reason I draw the comparison with Leeds as well. Do you remember how when Leeds went to play against Liverpool that time and they showed so much disrespect?
Yes.
The first game of the season, they lost 4-3. Yes. And they set the tone. You see how disrespectful Liverpool got, how much disrespect Liverpool got from Fulham in the first game, the 2-2 draw. And I remember thinking that will set the tone for the season for both, and it has set the tone.
I was shocked when I saw that game.
But Flomers, they were the ones that made us realise that Liverpool's got a glass chin this season.
That's exactly what Leeds did. Leeds came in with disrespect, and this needs to be the blueprint. When you come into the Premier League, right? Brentford did it against Arsenal that time.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You have to, your first game in the Premier League,
has to say
you
something.
Have to be disrespectful.
You have to say something.
And you've
got to walk up to the loudest clown in the bar and give it to them. That's it.
Just honk their nose.
You have to give it to them. Yeah, listen.
Also, Bert Leno's been tremendous for them. He's been really, really good. Like, there was that game, that Bournemouth game, where he made, like, that triple save, I think, when he was basically, like, falling back into the goal, then kept another one out. And, like you say, they are probably going to lose quite a lot of games, but they're going to go down swinging.
You know, the thing is, Fulham are probably, when you're in there, because they're trying to put as much space between them and 18th place and as much space as they can, and they're just going to go, right? The thing what they're doing is like the teams what I mentioned, what they've beaten so far, are the teams they have to beat.
And that's what's important. Yeah,
and like we saw what they can do against Liverpool, we saw against Arsenal, we saw that against Spurs as well. They are in that mode where you don't want to play Fulham at the moment.
No.
Especially there. You don't want to play them there, and even away from home. You don't want to play them. But that, like I say, Polina, unbelievable player. I don't think he's going to last too long there. But that Anthony Robertson as well. If Cucurella, and I'm not saying this disrespectfully towards Cucurella, can go for that money. And it's not nothing to do with the money. He's a good player, Cucurella, because he's somebody that when you watch him at Brighton, he stood out. He done things. He stood out defensively and going forward. And this, and when I watch Anthony Robertson against some of the top players, he stands out. When you see him against Zaha, against Salah, against any of the players, he's quick, he's strong, he gets forward, he's really robust. He's a very, very good player, really good defender. Another one I think probably Fulham might lose.
And can I,
go on, miss.
Yeah, the rebound, I want to say just to throw in this as well, there's players that Fulham can't lose, and there's also players who've had a bit of a renaissance. We've mentioned Willian, but also I think Andreas Pereira. That is a player who has really been through the mill, I think, was it Lazio, Flamengo, and they had a disastrous defeat that he was part of, who's contributed to, and has never fully found himself. And he's still only 26. And for him to be thriving, it's like he's found his place. There's a little bit of pressure off. He's got Willian there, like a fellow Brazilian. Mm. You've got like some vibes there. And obviously Willian, like, we don't talk about Willian's love of London enough.
Well, that's what, like, that's what
this man needs to be investigated. This man needs to be investigated. This man loves London too much. So I'm just like sort of thinking it's really nice to have Pereira in the mix, because, you know, it's so often that a player doesn't find his club and it feels like he's got his. So, yeah.
Like I said,
it's entertaining. Yeah. That's what the fans want. They just want to be entertained. Yeah. If you somehow drift into the relegation battle and it doesn't work out, you know, that's going to happen. But at least you're going to go down with a fight, and that's all fans want.
And the thing with Fulham fans is that when you play against Fulham, there's no nastiness. You go and pick up the ball, they don't shout shit and nastiness to you. They're lovely people. You know, the Fulham people, I'm quite pleased with them. And you know what? We mentioned managers and needing a chance. And like you mentioned with Marco Silva, he needed this to work for him. And it's for me, it was a perfect club to go to. And it's like when you watch the Avengers, Steve Rogers, when he went into the chamber, that's how they went in Fulham. And when they came out, they're Marco Silva when they came out the fucking chamber. They are now the fucking Captain Marvel. They've come out the chamber buff. That's what's happening.
Can I say this? You say, but actually one thing about, we're talking about superheroes, the superhero rep that Marco Silva had in the early in his career. Mm. It's very humble to take a job like the Fulham job, actually.
Sometimes these jobs come along and you've got to take it because you've got to rebuild your brand.
Yeah,
well, he's doing that now. He's doing that.
Yeah.
But one day soon, my friends, we will be talking about Mickey Beale because everybody wants that man.
Look at her with her QPR
shirt. You can't have my man. You can't have my man. You want him, but you can't have him. You can't have him. Honestly, get down to Loftus Road and come see some of this sexy, sexy football.
We're all Jolene.
Okay, guys, it's flowers time. The recipient of the flowers this week is somebody that we're going to have to say, yes. Kepa Arrizabalaga.
What a flow. What a name. Listen, this is the thing. You have to be a great human with a name like that.
You know something?
You got to go and do out something with a name like, you got to go and do something big. You got to do something big with a name.
Can
like
I say
that.
With Kepa, again, somebody, especially with what happened to him in that final at Wembley, with what Van Dijk done, is the ultimate. That could have been, that finishes people. That probably finishes you as a goalkeeper. I think that Kepa's gone he fell so low that people actually forgotten him. You know what I mean? Yes, Mendy's got injured, lost form towards the end of last season, got injured, and Kepa's come in and everybody's like, oh yeah, Kepa's in. It's only when you watched him even the other week against Villa last week, making those saves. And then you realize he's metamorphosis, man. The man's changed. He's gone from caterpillar to butterfly in what he's doing, the saves he's made. What people don't look at, and people never look at, they just think, oh, Kepa's back. Oh, he's playing brilliantly. Oh, well, that man, from that time, from those times, you know what I mean? The amount of shit that he's taken up to this point, he's had to take that every single minute of every single day. He's had to think about that. He's had to go somewhere where a lot of people will not be able to go and come back from. I've seen players in bad form, nowhere near the team, not even a second goalkeeper, nowhere near the team looking like there's no way back for me, especially when the goalkeeper who's in front of you is winning World Goalkeeper of the Year and Golden Gloves and with the reputation he had. So what he's gone through from then to get himself in the team now and probably, you know, he wouldn't drop him even if Mendy's fit, it's nothing less than miraculous in respects of his mental strength.
It's
and incredible. How he's got himself.
Yeah, goalkeepers can't do what strikers do. They can't go and score a goal to redeem themselves.
No, it's magnificent. Even the other day, I was thinking, I put it in the group. You know, I've gone very nitpicky. I thought, could he have gone with his right hand with the save? But he's been making great saves. He went with his left hand. He didn't quite get it and it went in against United. But in respects of him, the sweeper keeper, coming out, reading the play, all that stuff, he's always been good at that, but it's the saves now he's making. And honestly, I think it's different for goalkeepers. Remember the Liverpool goalkeeper, Champions League final?
Carrius. Right? Well, maybe concussion, actually, but still.
You know, I'm not saying that Kepa fell to those depths because we're talking about a Champions League final, what he done. But like, you're still in a place as a player where you can't see the light in the tunnel.
Right.
You know, so he's got to get flowers simply because of the way he's come back. And I've seen players down and he's kept
just on the Karius thing to throw this in. Sorry, because there was a lot of talk about Karius being concussed in that final. But I think the real thing that was difficult for Karius was the seasons after, because in the season after, in the preseason, he made a really bad mistake in just the preseason match. But it went viral because everyone memed it. And then the year after that, he never got back to his aura. So even though he recovered from whatever he'd suffered in the final, just to sort of add that in, because a lot of people, you know, don't talk about the concussion enough.
Yes.
But you're right, Ian, to bounce back, it's just such a remarkable thing, especially when Mendy was so far ahead. But I think the thing about Kepa that's good for Potter's system, the way Potter wants to play, what's interesting with Potter is he is quite ruthless, right? Like Cucurella, he worked with him, but he's got no favourites from the Brighton days, right? He's very clear with that. And like he's come into the club. Yes, Mendy has got the rep, but Kepa is playing the type of football that Potter will get him to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I kind of have to respect him for that, for giving players who are less fancied a chance. You know, that's great coaching.
I do hope for Potter's sake, as another Englishman, you know, he can continue to just progress slowly with what he's doing. Because, you know, you speak to people and they say, yeah, well, let's see how he manages the egos in a bigger dressing room. We're talking about somebody who's come from, you know, Östersund, what he was doing in Swansea. He's learnt. This is what I'm saying about hopefully a Steven Gerrard and that can learn from the mistakes what you make, like what he could have made at Rangers, which was really tough for him because Rangers were seen as a top team in Scotland. So you're having to win. So even it kind of masks things. He's learnt, Potter. He's learnt. And he's got to the place where, like Chelsea, because he deserves to be there. And now we're talking about an elite coach with top players. So you can't really see anything other than success for him because he doesn't seem fazed at all by the level that he's now reached. He's not fazed because he's got to a level where the players are now at the level what he's at. So we should only see great stuff from him. So, you know, I'm really pleased for him, but I'm going to give Kepa flowers because I think that that journey is underestimated. People don't realize what he's gone through to do that. Now, obviously, people are waiting to see if he makes a mistake and, you know, hopefully he doesn't. But what he's done up to this point is fantastic. And that's why I'm going to give him some flowers.
Love it.
Guys, I'm going to have to say goodbye. I'm in the country. And I want to go.
He's back, baby.
Yeah, I'm in the country and I'm going to go and do some walking and thinking. I'm going to go and think. Because I was listening to Steve Harvey, just quickly, guys. Listening to Steve Harvey talking about being happy to wake up in the morning. And I said, oh, fucking hell, here we go. But then he started talking about it and about how happy you've got to be to wake up in the morning because a lot of people, unfortunately, will not and grasp that day. And as much as I was trying to go, I was going, yeah, you're right. I should be happy. And I am happy.
Listen, can I just say look, that joyful thing you feel every morning, that's what I feel every Monday when I see Ryan for Stadio and every Thursday.
Can I just say quickly, I saw you guys with the shirts and that. It was amazing, Moose.
Yeah, the shirts.
Oh my goodness.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh wow.
That was real. And I saw you doing your behind the wall. You've done the behind the wall.
I was down behind the wall.
Moose's dreams come true.
Honestly, I'm trying to find, I'm just looking for joy. I'm looking for joy now. You know what I mean? I'm looking 100%. For joy. So that's where I am. So guys, thanks for coming.
See you soon.
I'll see you soon. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Thank you very much to Moussa Kwonga and Flo Lloyd-Hughes. Thanks, like I said, thanks for listening. It's great to be back on my world tour. But I'm back. Everything's getting interesting in the Premier League and got a World Cup around the corner. I'll see everybody soon.